Welcome to Better Cast Saul, the officially unofficial podcast for Better Call Saul on AMC. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we're back. It's been a long year without Saul in my life, but we are back for the season three preview, which it's not a spoiler to say that there's a big returning character in this, right?
To my chagrin, no. No, it is not.
Because they've kind of let the gato out of the bag here.
He's
all over. Yeah, he's all over the promos.
So yeah, Gus, they're making no secret that this is going to be the year that Gus Fring returns, or I guess it's a little bit of his prequel action. Now, I'm a little annoyed that is a big spoiler.
Yeah,
but
a little bit.
I don't think, if I'm looking from Vince and Peter's perspective, what are the odds we can get Giancarlo Esposito to do several days of filming and that not leak out?
Yeah.
And then the hardcore fans that pay attention and give a shit are going to find out about it anyway, and it's going to be an open secret.
It'll be all over the blogs. And
right. And sure. You know, as we were talking about it here in our little precast banter, I think it's pretty clear that the number one candidate for who sent the don't message, put that on Mike's window is Gus or one of his errand boys.
Sure. I mean, whether it's Victor or Gus himself, like somebody working for Gus, I think it's clear put that on that window.
Yeah. So that it's unfortunate that we can't have that thing. Like I think the delight of seeing Gus or pulling up the Los Polos Hermanos and the anticipation would have been off the charts if you didn't know it was coming. But now that we know it's coming, I guess we can talk about it. Because the thing is, it's like I never thought it was a foregone conclusion that we would get the Gus, because you never know. Like, we talked a lot when we covered the Breaking Bad seasons 1 through 3 that it's kind of murky how exactly Saul knows Gus. If Saul know, if he does in fact know Gus, or if this is something that's more that Mike is trying to handle, and what exactly Saul and Mike's relationship is. Because it's kind of clear to me from the Breaking Bad side that Saul / Jimmy certainly doesn't know the full extent of Mike's skill set.
Right.
He doesn't know about his desert sniping from one click out. He doesn't know about, I mean, He probably knows about it. I mean, obviously he knows about his checkered past as a police officer, but I think he thinks Mike is like a B&E kind of guy.
Yeah.
Like his bag of dirty tricks goes, you know, filming husbands cheating on wives and maybe stealing a document or two here, but
Getting some money back.
So I guess that's one of my things I'm going to be looking for, is to fill in those gaps of Gus's relationship to the Albuquerque local scene and how these initiatives, because clearly, you know, he's got this long-term scheme to take down the cartel.
Yeah.
What does that look like in the beginning? What are some things you're looking to get out of the Gus elements of this season?
I think I like the gaps that it's going to fill in for us. You know, it seems like the most natural thing in the world to tell this part of these characters' stories, and it would almost be a little disappointing if we went through the entire run of Better Call Saul and didn't learn exactly the nature of the relationship between Mike, Gus, and Saul, right? Because in Breaking Bad, it seems like there's this divide where Mike is kind of in the middle. But I think we have an opportunity here, and Villigan and Gould have an opportunity to cement that and kind of expand on it. And I think that'll be interesting. And especially with the stuff with Nacho, like in Better Call or in Breaking Bad, rather, there's a scene where Jesse and Walt take Saul out to the desert and are threatening to shoot him. And he clearly thinks it's Nacho come back to kill him. What could that be for? Why would Nacho want to kill him?
I can think of several reasons, but
already, right?
Yeah, right.
But I still feel like there's more to that story.
Yeah.
Where he would automatically assume that. So I'm really interested to see the gaps that it's going to fill in the Breaking Bad history.
Do you think? Okay. So I agree. We're going to get a lot of those things filled in. Do you think we're going to get to some of the more interesting things about Gus? Do we think we're going to get some backstory about his partner?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think they're going to shed some light about their relationship? Do you think we're going to go all the way back to the Pinochet regime, which they hinted that he
Chile,
had some, he had some really sketchy Chilean military and exile kind of connections, that there was something that even the cartel was afraid to just nakedly move. You know, he's something of a made man. Like, do you think that they'll touch on those? Because honestly, I hope they preserve a little bit of Gus's mystique.
Okay.
As selfishly as I want to know everything, like, one of the things that makes Mike cool, one of the things that makes Gus cool, is that they are a bit of a cipher, a blank slate, where you know, the rumor and suggestion about them is probably cooler than, man, I
the legend is always way cooler than the real story,
than the fact,
right?
Than the fact.
Yeah. So I think, it's interesting because I don't think the show usually goes big like that. You know, they're not, the show doesn't very often get even out of Albuquerque.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it goes to Alaska, but even then it's a very small, it's a tiny show, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's a very focused
Alaska.
Show.
You're talking about Nebraska. No.
I'm talking about Breaking Bad and Call Saul
okay,
as a whole.
Gotcha. The universe.
Right. The universe is very focused. It's mm-hmm. very narrow. And it would be weird to me if we were to, like, go to Chile and see, like, this military coup and, like, all of this stuff happening mm-hmm. around Gus would feel strange. So I don't think we're in danger of really going there.
Okay.
But I think we're probably going to get a lot of the inner workings of Gus's business.
When they inevitably, and maybe not inevitably, but I feel like now that they got Gus involved, that it is inevitable that we will see the scene where Saul's out in the desert on his knees begging for his life Jesse and Walt have him at gunpoint.
Yeah.
If you could choose, would you just insert that scene from archival footage or would you restage it with present day Bryan Cranston, Aaron Paul, and Bob Odenkirk,
Jimmy McGill? Yeah. So I think we answered this question before, and I can't remember what my feeling was then, but now I think I would probably restage that because your memory of a scene is always a little bit fuzzy.
Sure.
And I think the contrast, because I don't know if you can just go into that scene without any warm up from like Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston, right? You kind of need them on screen at least a little bit before then.
I think Bryan Cranston can just be Walter. Like,
I agree.
But Aaron Paul, I don't think can just be Jesse. Like, season mm-hmm. 6 Jesse wasn't season 1 Jesse for
it's
sure.
Very different,
and
yeah.
like they feel like he's bulked up a little bit. He's matured into his face.
But this is kind of my point. Like, I think it would be weird if you had them in the show at all mm-hmm. before showing that scene. And then you went into that scene and just re-aired the original because they're going to look so much different. Whereas
but I think
our brains
be,
will let us fill it, like fuzz it all
oh,
in,
sure,
right?
Sure. I do think it would be funny, though, if like it's uh-huh. obviously 10 years younger, all these guys.
It would be
and
kind
then
of
they
funny.
Just cut. It's like literally, and it'd also be nostalgic and just, I feel like the audience would roll with that just because of the immense affection we have for the source material. But I think if I'm Vince Gilligan and Peter Gould, the temptation that like we can get Aaron Paul and Bryan Cranston, and they owe us like they would do it for a song like to get him in there for another day to do that like this just how much fun that would be for them. I feel like they have to do it, even though I think it would be almost more interesting to not do it that way.
I mean, if you didn't want to refilm it, I could see a way where like. Saul clearly has this traumatic event that's happened to him and we don't really know what it is. And then at some point during the night, he has like a dream and his dream would be like these younger people and a younger him, but it only happened like a day ago or something. Uh-huh. And it could be like chalked up to just weird imagination stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Here's the other thing that I was kind of surprised at. I think Giancarlo has a no haircut clause in his contract. Because the thing that really bugs me, because he plausibly still looks a lot like Gus Fring, but his hair, like he had the close cropped, almost, you know, semi-shaved, like the Aaron look going. He's now clearly has much longer hair that is just plastered down to his head.
Right.
It looks weird.
I'm hoping, well, I think we've seen scenes of him in the show.
And he's got the long hair.
He's
it looks
got the
weird.
Long hair. Yeah, I was hoping that was only for the promos and then he would cut it for the show. But
I think he's like, no.
Yeah.
I'm the one who cuts. And
he's also looking a little older, but
a little.
What are you gonna do?
Don't we all?
Yeah,
don't we all?
I do for sure.
So that's the stuff that we've got, kind of the fun stuff that we want to revisit. Like the big cliffhangers were who waved Mike off of the assassination attempt of Hector Salamanca. Uncle Tio,
which
as we know
we're
him.
Almost certain is Gus.
Is Gus or one of his flunkies. Now, The thing that I don't know and I can't connect the dots on are we to and Shane Bowman of the Heisenberg Chronicles and Film Schlubs podcast and Eric Walquist. I just recently we did a couple weeks ago Breaking Bad movie podcast where we talked about the two French directors that did a super edit of Breaking Bad at about 2 hours long, and they reduced it all to a 2 hour movie. They took me behind the woodshed and said, I can't believe you're talking so much shit about Vince Gilligan and coincidences and how, like, you know, unlikely this stuff is when, you know, essentially I should have more blind trust in Vince that, like, they've got these angles covered and, you know, it's not going to seem fishy at all that Nacho's head was perfectly into position to block a sniper bullet, even though he didn't know exactly where Mike would set up or if Mike was going to be setting up there and where and what angle and all that stuff. And I felt like a little bit of that hit home. Maybe I was a little hasty of saying, like, but I did think, because I just re-listened to her last few podcasts and I watched the last few episodes this week, and I do think that that's the one problem I have with the walk of this, because maybe it's because, well, before I lead you, I do feel like the Better Call Saul, much more to an extent than Breaking Bad does, leans a little bit on coincidence and chance timing. Why do you think that is? I have my theory, but I want to see if you come up with something better.
I don't know. I mean, I sort of agree with that sentiment that it does, but I couldn't tell you why.
Do you think it's because Vince has a really clear-cut time and chronology that he's playing with, and that allows him to be a little bit more directive and less organic? Because in Breaking Bad, like, you know, at the end of every season, they'd paint themselves in the corner. And to the extent that they try to do that in Better Call Saul, well and good, but still, this is fitting into a universe's timetable that's already been established.
Right.
So it's like, I wonder, even consciously or subconsciously, that allows them to take more risks with suspension of disbelief, because I hope not, or if they do, yeah. I hope there's a good in-universe explanation, because I guess it corresponds that if you have this timeline that you can more efficiently plug into and take bigger risks, then maybe you would actually have it more mapped out, and it's I'm going to look like an idiot in the first episode. It's going to be like, oh, Nacho is actually a double agent from Gus, or
And somehow knew where he'd set up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That seemed
like Jim
seem super
Beaver,
plausible.
The gun guy, put a GPS tracker on the gun, and he was actually, you know, lining up, looking at his cell phone. And I don't know. I don't know. Because otherwise, it just seems almost supernatural, the coincidence of that lining up.
Yeah.
Like I said, 50 feet in either direction, and Mike's got a clear shot at this guy.
No, I feel you. I think they are playing it a little looser on this series. You know, early on, I had a lot of problems with the pacing of some of the episodes and some of the montages in particular.
Right.
And I think they've gotten a little indulgent in that stuff. Some of it works better than others, but I think this series is just playing it a little looser. They're not so worried about all of those tiny details.
The other thing, I guess, because we talked about this quite a bit last year, is, you know, the fact that they're trying to balance Mike and Jimmy's story. And they have a good problem that both of those are compelling as hell. And it's like, you know, I was remarking that I know it seems like a popular sentiment on Reddit and some of the message boards to be like, Mike's stuff is intrinsically more interesting because there's like life and death and, like, you know, the cousins are after him and his granddaughter's in the mix.
Right.
Jimmy has just got his asshole brother and his troubled relationship with his girlfriend, Kim. I don't see it that way. I think, like, when I cut back and forth, I'm both like, oh, okay, yeah, we get back, and I'm equally engaged. With Gus, and we talked about the temptation of, like, fleshing out his backstory, do you think that might be a problem when now there's three equally compelling balls in the air? It seems like a challenge from a pacing department.
Yeah, I do. And they're stepping a little bit outside of the Breaking Bad wheelhouse, which is kind of the two perspectives, you know. We always got Walt and Jesse, and sometimes they were apart.
Right.
And when they were, they handled that really well. they didn't really go to the three person well very often.
Mm-hmm.
Although,
yeah, Skyler,
that's not true.
And
well,
Hank,
I would say is the third one. Like Skyler had her moments, but not very often.
Right.
But yeah, Hank, I guess would be a third. So maybe they can pull it off.
And even Gus.
I don't think it'll be a problem.
Even Gus in season four, like there was a stint stretches where it was more of a Gus, Gus, Mike, Jesse show.
Yeah.
But yeah, I that's the other thing that I guess I was kind of a little concerned with.
I think they can handle it.
So the other thing is, are things going to come to a head with Jimmy and his brother this season? Because like I am increasingly angry with Chuck. I said a lot of strong words on the podcast, and I'm like, huh. When I sit down and watch these episodes, I wonder. Nope. I think Chuck is just just beyond the pale in the way he's. And if I'm divvying up blame, I'm blaming mostly Chuck for the relationship that's going on in the family. And I would like to get some more insights like we did last year with Jimmy with his like being, you know, his relationship with his father and running the store and how he kind of like got that scofflaw tendency that his brother missed. But I'm kind of ready for things to shit or get off the pot with Chuck, because right now the situation is he's got a tape that he thinks is damning against Jimmy. I think that I'm actually getting more convinced that Chuck's going to use this as a blustery threat, because we talked at length last season about, you know, Chuck had Jimmy to where Jimmy's like, you know what, you want me to quit practicing law? Fine, I'll quit practicing law to try to help out Kim.
Yeah,
and I think that's what Chuck wanted. This is a big disagreement between us. I think that's what Chuck actually wanted, but he didn't want to be that. He's aware that, like, he's skirting pretty close to the law in some of these things as well. Whereas now if he's got him, if he can force him out because he's got a clear-cut, confession where he's broken the law, which is sacred, I think he might get his fangs out. However, I also think Jimmy can just be like, fuck you. That tape just has a clearly exasperated brother dealing with a mentally ill relative trying to do whatever he can to restore a modicum of happiness and stability to this relationship. And I think that's how a judge would see it.
And they've already introduced this concept of him taking temporary guardianship over Chuck. And his mental state being called into question by actual doctors who are going to be able to give him an actual diagnosis potentially.
Right.
Like that could come back on Chuck if he's not careful.
I mean, honestly, it seems like when you're talking about who's had who by the short curlies, it's been Jimmy. Like, Jimmy could have had his brother committed.
Oh, yeah, time and time again.
And I think if the shoe were on the other foot, Jimmy would be committed.
You might be right, yeah.
He would have been put away in the hospital. He would have been put away it's hard to say because Chuck did help him out.
I think they both have cards to play, but I do think it's going to come to more of a head here. Like, they're both going to take actions that are irrevocable.
However, the other interesting thing is this: what seems clearly a doomed experiment to merge the Wexler McGill. I mean, they're separate but equal law firms. Like we watched a preview where there's already friction between client sharing and little jealousy or a little consciousness of like, whoa, she's a way better lawyer than I am.
Saul's going to paint over that rainbow.
With the
WM?
Yeah, like it's almost like something off of a metal cover.
I feel like he's trying to pull just a tip here with his law practice. Like, I'm just going to put the tip in your law practice. That's
right,
it.
Right. Yeah, we're still separate, but you know.
Yeah, but I'll... WM on the wall, you know.
Yeah, I might have stolen some of your clients and wrote in wills for him. But, I just feel like that's going to get him in trouble because Kim's a hell of a lawyer. And Jimmy, I don't think, can keep up with her on a law, on a legal footing, nor on a hustle footing, even. Like, she can out-hustle him. So he's going to have to eventually get into these dirty bags of tricks if he wants to pull his own weight.
Yeah.
I think that's another, because in that preview scene we showed, she's like, look, if this is about the money, and he's like, oh, it's not about the money. I think there's enough, chauvinist in Jimmy that it is a little bit about the money, that he wants to contribute equally, and if he can't, it's going to bug him.
I think so, but...
And there's gold out in them streets.
Oh, yeah, and he knows it.
And if you're willing to look, and willing to look the other way.
And I think he could find it.
Oh, yeah.
The other thing about it is I feel like they are a boiling pot as well. Obviously, Kim, nowhere to be found in Breaking Bad. So what her fate is, we don't know exactly. Are they still together and they just didn't show it? Didn't seem like it because he's off in Nebraska now with Haste. But it feels like their relationship is a boiling pot as well, especially right now that they're working together. I think that could be a problem going forward. Like, not only is the Chuck thing, because she's already pissed at him about breaking the law and telling her about it, and when he continues inevitably to do these things, it's going to strain that relationship more and more.
Do you think that that might be how Saul is born, that Chuck forces him to give up his legal license and all that stuff, and then in response he literally just creates a brand new identity to practice law after? Because I wonder if something bad's not going to happen to Chuck. Because I don't see how Jimmy McGill practices law as Saul Goodman in the style he does in fucking Albuquerque, New Mexico, and not have Chuck just shutting him down.
Yeah.
I don't think he can do it. So I think something bad is going to happen to Chuck here. Kim, not as clear. This might be the season where he's just left with nobody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his childhood friend and fellow grifter died in season one. Everything's very precarious with his partner and his brother here. Yeah, and that's the thing, is like the tragedy with Kim and Jimmy is neither one of them want to accept the other for who they are. Like, I think that Jimmy thinks,
like, neither of them can.
Well, and because they both, there's stuff that they, like, Kim can see Jimmy try so hard and be industrious and succeed, and like, he really wants to be that kind of lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy can see Kim roll around in the mud with him and have fun and be like, oh man, if it's just a right nudge and she'll be that kind of lawyer.
Yeah.
But they both, like, neither one of them want to be like, you know what? I want to be the kind of person that this person wants to be and get on board with them.
Right. They're fundamentally different.
They're both struggling for who's going to have control of the wheel and who's going to be turning to the left or the right. And that's bad news in a business or personal relationship.
Yeah. No, I think we're probably gonna shed one of those characters this year.
I think maybe both.
I think it's a little too early for both. If this is a 5-season run, I think we need one person to hang around till next season, and then he can go off and do his Saul thing for the final one. But
so that's the other thing,
I think we might lose Chuck this season.
Like, even in the finale, I was watching, like, you know, Kim is just punching and beating on Jimmy and so angry that he's put her in these positions, but then she's, you know, he's giving her a back rub, and like, but all these simmering tensions, it's hard for me to believe that those are going to be like go away for a whole season in a believable way. That, like, you know, maybe mm-hmm. you're right. Maybe she exits and she's stuck with Chuck.
Well,
that would be my nightmare situation.
I mean, the gauges on Chuck and Jimmy's tension mm-hmm. and Kim and Jimmy's tension are at different levels right now.
You think
and
so?
And I think what's going to happen is this Chuck and Jimmy pot boils completely over. Something mm-hmm. terrible happens and we probably lose Chuck, and Kim and Jimmy are gonna get to the top of the pot, right? Mm. Like, they're gonna be boiling as well.
See, I feel like the pressure gauge on Jim and Kimmy are in the red.
Oh, you think so?
Jimmy, like, all Kim the way in the red, and Chuck, it's like off the gauge.
Well, yeah,
like the engineers are like, we're surprised the boiler hasn't blown, to tell you the truth. Yeah, that's what it feels like to me.
Mm-hmm.
Watching these last two, three episodes, but yeah, because, like, you know, Jimmy, you hit the nail on the head. He cannot be honest with what he needs and wants from Kim. And
he can't agrees, be the type of lawyer Kim wants him to be.
He agrees to things that he's not fully committed to, and he's going to make a mess of them.
Yeah.
I mean, just like what he did with whatever the law firm.
Davis and Maine.
And Maine.
Where he took just massive shits in the toilet until they fired him.
Yeah, like that's the kind of, and I don't think he'll do that with Kim. It's going to be more like trying to always weasel into her ledger and her case files and all that. That's what's going to be the problem there.
Yeah.
Hey, everybody. You might ask yourself, how are these guys doing podcasts for 3 of the biggest shows on television right now, all at the same time? And the answer is, it's a job.
Cocaine. Oh.
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 Well, yeah.
Whoops.
That's how we pay for the cocaine. It's our J-O-B, and the way we get paid primarily is through generosity of our listeners by joining our club at club.baldmove.com. Now, it's not all a one-way street. We actually give stuff back. There are The Lunch with Jim and Aaron, fantastic variety show. There is the quips that are released. There's all kinds of bonus content, ad-free feeds. You never have to listen to me drone about this stuff again. Best of all, you can get a free 30-day trial just by signing up and you can we have no illusions. You can suck up all the premium content,
store it up, all that content,
store it up for the year, and just stiff us at the end of the free month, and just leave us hanging, leave us, no honor amongst podcasting thieves. Hey, it's all good. We just wanted to get you to try to check it out.
Yeah, because we think once you get the first hit.
Because we also know podcast users are consumers in general are lazy, and the odds if you sign up that you're going to keep paying, and we got you trapped. Suddenly the trap's on the other foot, huh? You're going to gnaw it off to get free.
We got a trap on our foot. You got a trap on your foot.
That's right.
We're in this together.
None of us will have left feet at the end of this whole experiment. But you can go to club.baldmove.com to get the teeth sunk in just a little bit. For 30 days, it's free though. club.baldmove.com. So the other thing I noticed on rewatch is they set up this thing of like, we need a receptionist.
Yeah.
Do you think Jimmy gets the his classic receptionist in this season?
I hope so. Yeah.
That would be kind of funny.
Uh-huh.
I would like to see that. There's also a hint that maybe that at one point they had a romantic relationship, although
there's a history with them,
you
for
never
sure.
Can tell how much of that's bullshit, and I would say it's super bullshit, except for I saw him actually successfully pull off the Kevin Costner gambit.
Oh, right.
So he's not all talk.
Not all talk. Not all talk.
But I think that would be kind of funny.
There is a history there, and I think they need to start building it.
Do you think he's going to like to try to? I'm just wondering how, because there's a lot of things that would be funny. Like, you know, Jimmy is trying to pump up his caseload, so he gets a 30-foot tall Statue of Liberty to put in front of the building. And Kim's like,
yeah,
fucking no, absolutely not. But I don't know, because it's interesting, because I was really watching her face, as mad as she was at him, like, you know, when they went to the hospital and all that. But she's looking at his commercial, this epic commercial he showed, where Jim, you know, I'm the lawyer you can trust. And she was clearly proud of him.
Yeah.
And she was hoping that he could be that kind of, like, yeah, maybe color outside the laws, but you're, you know, you're certainly not going to break core ethical things. And I just feel like, yeah, he's going to run over those lines this year.
Oh, yeah.
I have no idea. Like, I'm very curious to see how, because last year him and Mike were almost on two different shows.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the first season, their orbits were much closer together. I'm wondering how they're going to pull that back in.
I think through Nacho probably,
because
that's the closest tie that they have at this point.
Right.
Now that he's not working at the public defender's the courthouse or whatever it is.
Right.
I don't know, and I'm curious, like, what Mike's play is here. He seems like he's just out for vengeance, right? Mm-hmm. Like, he just wants to kill this guy because he's a bad dude.
Right.
And I guess that's within Mike's character.
Right.
But it seems like it's going to be complicated, and now he's got himself mixed up in something much bigger. And I'm curious how it plays out.
The big image from this year's marketing campaign, other than Gus's smiling face, is Jimmy standing against a wall,
yeah,
with the big broad stripes painted on
him, yeah, which the jail suit essentially.
Well, it's also suggestive of like the stars, and because they're wider,
they're
suggestive
wider,
of like the American flag, but also clearly, yes, conflict, being a convict,
right.
The old-timey Monopoly Man jail suit, and a little bit about paint, maybe painted into the corner. There's a little bit of that symbol, and just to look on his face is like a man who is a bit out of his depth, or yeah, has been caught with his hand in a cookie jar.
Yeah, I mean, this could be, you know, the theme of the season, which is going to be this confrontation about the tape that Chuck has.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's going to come to a head. So I don't know if this is meant to take literally, mm-hmm, or if this is something that's more just like, here's the core conflict and we're going to represent it visually.
Yeah. I don't see. I don't think he can go to jail, though.
That's what kind of show would that be with Jimmy in jail?
I don't know. And he gets that's the thing. Like, I feel that this is my prediction is sometime in the next three seasons, Chuck has to die or. Yeah. Maybe more tragically, he's going to end up being a vegetable in a nursing home. Maybe more tragically, he's a vegetable in the same nursing home that Tio's in.
Yeah, with Hector.
So you know that ultimately he gets his ass blown.
Boy.
that would be kind of – but you know what I'm saying? Like, there's no way that Chuck, with any of his wits about him, with his criminal brother out there practicing law on billboards and TV shows, there's
You're
no
right.
way that can happen.
No way.
So that's got to explode. Mm-hmm. That's got to explode. I actually think the tape is going to be like maybe the first three episode arc.
Yeah.
Because it's not something you can just – at some point, Jimmy's going to be like, you know what? Use it or don't. Fuck mm-hmm. off.
Yeah.
And I'm really – you know, they've been dancing around that relationship a while. And I'm kind of interested in this to go to Endgame because mm-hmm. I am liking Jimmy more and more. I'm hating Chuck more and more.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just ready for them to square off.
Where do you think Hamlin, and McGill fits into this? You think we're going to see much more of Howard? Is he going to be a big bad – in the future?
Well, I mean, that's the thing, because, like, he went from unwashed asshole to washed, bleached asshole.
Yeah.
Last, because, like, I feel for him. Mm-hmm. Like, I really feel for him.
He's stuck in this familial battle that's ridiculous.
Yeah, and the fact that he, like, he's the brother that Chuck wished he had.
Uh-huh.
But all the pressure that comes from that, like, there's two reactions. You can try to be the perfect man.
Mm-hmm.
And anticipate his every need and still disappoint him. Or you can be like, Jimmy, I'm going to disappoint him regardless. Fuck him.
Yeah.
Like, that's that. But there's both ways, but they still clearly kind of crave his approval and affection. I don't know. Like, I think that Vince feels very sympathetic to this guy, too, after last season. Because, like, in season one, I'd be like, well, if Chuck goes, we're going to enjoy the carnage of, HHM going down. I don't think that's the case anymore. Like, I would feel if Howard gets up shit creek because of Jimmy and Chuck's actions, I would feel bad. I feel really bad because I feel like the guy, he doesn't deserve that. He's now we know that he's tried to fight for Jimmy and he's tried to fight for Kim. Mm-hmm. And Chuck has been the one that made him be this asshole.
So I recently did a rewatch of season two because I wanted to be, somewhat prepared for this. And my girlfriend hadn't seen it, so we watched it. I know we disagreed on Hamlin through a lot of that season.
Mm-hmm.
Was Howard the unwashed asshole or was he a bleached asshole?
Mm-hmm.
And watching it the second time, I'm even more confused. Confused because the first time through, I was like, no, Howard is definitely out to fuck Kim. It's not Chuck.
Hmm.
This time, I'm not sure who did it. And I think I might have missed a couple of scenes that were key this time
mm-hmm.
around.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm very up in the air on how much of an asshole Howard is, if at all.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, I'm on the side that Howard is a misunderstood person,
right.
And he's suffered under the heel of Chuck as much as Jimmy, maybe more so.
And I think that's certainly largely true, if not entirely.
Right.
The case.
I think you do have wiggle room when you're talking about the relationship with Kim.
That's the only place. Yeah.
But I'm willing to. He's angry at Kim because of the shit that she's gotten him into with Chuck.
Like, his client.
In absence of Chuck, mm-hmm. that I think he is a lot cooler cucumber about this.
Yeah.
Sometimes, sometimes you got to chew your employee's ass just because your ass has been chewed. You might even agree broadly that there's ways I think you can communicate with, like, look, upper management has decided this shit is not cool and it's not going to fly and you can't fucking do this again.
Yeah.
However, I also had your back because,
I took the heat, but...
Yeah. It's like one of those situations, every once in a while, like, I had a situation where an employee took a stand against one of upper management that's not in the chain of command because I had given them a different directive and, all that did is pissed off that guy and they went to the executive management and, like, all this shit started rolling down the hill and I'm like, hey, next time C-suite executive walks into office and asks for something to be done, maybe you do it.
Yeah.
Or tell him you're going to do it
tell
and,
him.
Give, and yep. then as you're preparing, give me a call.
Yeah.
So I can do, because I got my suite of tricks that I can do too, but, like, maybe not a bad idea is to be like, hey, Aaron said this, fuck off, boss man.
That
felt more of that situation. Like, he didn't like the situation he was in.
But he is also very fiercely competitive with his law firm. And he has a very particular style and taste, right? And if you color outside those lines, you very quickly get on his bad side, I think. And that's what Kim did.
And there's also a little bit of
Kim
shit because she would take it. And I always think that's bullshit for management because, like, sometimes you're like, hey, this employee's got a little broader shoulders. I'll be harder on them and everyone else can take note. even though they don't deserve it as much. But I will not say that Howard is a very strong individual. He's a little bit weak and wishy-washy. So like that, feel like that kind of goes with the situation or goes with the territory.
Yeah, but I'm interested to see how they weave Hamlin and Gil back in, if they do at all.
Because really, there's not a lot to care about there. No, I don't care about Howard, and Kim is gone there, and like, you know, maybe Ernie. Mm-hmm. Maybe Ernie can be the receptionist.
Yeah. So there's so much speculation about Ernie. We talked about it.
The Gus Fring son deal.
Right, and how it's so dumb, but now it's totally on the table, and it's going to be real stupid if they do it, and they're probably going to do it.
Is it going to be – okay, whoa. Why is it on the table?
Because he's literally the – okay, so it's on the table because Gus is back, right? Like, if Gus wasn't all over the promos
– I don't think that's enough to say that the him being Gus's son is on the table.
No, but he has a style very much like Gus, yes? With his dress and his mannerisms, things like that. He could potentially be Gus's son. I'll say that.
He's got the blurred thing going, the black nerd.
Right. You know? I think it's a little too much. It's a little too much for me. I don't know. I mean, Gus.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's on the table. I'd say it's in the county now. It's in whatever Albuquerque County is. Yeah, it's not on the table, but it's still pretty. It'd be an out there theory. I would think it would be funny if, like, Ernie gets fired, and then you see him at a Los Pollos Hermanos just trying to make ends meet.
Uh-huh.
You know, because he's in the mail room, and then he's like some kind of law clerk, and then he got assigned to be, you know, Chuck's gopher boy. And he fucked up pretty hardcore last year.
Yeah, he straight up lied.
Even if Chuck didn't know about him lying, I think that Chuck was mad that he called Jimmy, knowing his concern. Like, that was an act of disloyalty. So wouldn't be surprised if he's going to be unemployed. And it would be funny. I obviously wouldn't be happy if that's okay. So let's run the scenarios. But he's Gus's son, literal son.
All right, but I think in the scenario you just described, it's far better for him to go work at the Los Pollos Hermanos and not be Gus's son.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I will. What about this? Because we know Gus has these scholarships.
Uh-huh.
What if Ernie is just a beneficiary of one of the Gus Fring or Maximilian? I think it was named after Max, right?
Uh-huh.
What if he's just a
Lebowski Urban Achievers?
Yeah. What if he's just a because, like, I think that's a sufficient tie to Gus Fring to explain why he might dress after his mentor, the guy that gave him a hand up.
Yeah. Then go work on it at his restaurant when he falls on hard times.
Yeah, because he's like, come, you know, Ernie, it's fine. You can work the counter. that's my best Giancarlo.
It's spot on.
Which actually, that's not a Giancarlo. Giancarlo sounds nothing like Gus Fring. That's me.
Oh, that's true.
That's
me
doing Giancarlo as Gus Fring. the literal son of Gus is a little absurd.
It is. It's a little much.
But I can see them drawing direct parallels and like using, like it wouldn't surprise me to find out he was one of those, you know, adopted kind of like mentored along with the scholarships and stuff.
Yeah, I just get this sinking feeling that we're headed for the reveal that he's Gus's son.
I don't. Like, adopted or biological?
Biological. I think that's where we're going.
Because I really like the idea that Gus and Max were lovers. Like, I'm also on board. Of course, that obviously doesn't preclude from him from having a sham family that he's, you know, procreating through. But
Or for him to just appreciate all the sexes.
He could be bisexual.
Him and Max, they have an open thing with Gus and his wife or Gus and his lover, and they have a kid together. Who knows?
Yeah, okay. All right, some kind of all weird of non-nuclear triad thing.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, do you have anything else you want to talk about the upcoming season?
I don't. I'm super excited. I can't wait.
I'm sure you folks are going to be excited as well, and you might have some things you want to talk about. Send it to bettercallsaul@baldmove.com.
Really had to think about that one. It's been a while.
It is, like, yeah. And I think you've actually been it's been a while. It's been a minute. It's been since Westworld since I've compiled feedback.
Yeah.
Other than Young Pope and like that was just a Bald Move TV project, baby. This is pillow talk. Better Call Saul at baldmove.com.
I do have one announcement.
Oh.
You're going to be out of town next week for the premiere.
I am.
So in your stead, Eric Walquist of Direct Fame is going to be sitting in with me. He's also a huge fan of the show. He's up to date, and he can't wait.
He's one, the other one that joined me on the Breaking Bad movie podcast. So
right.
He's got some recent reps. He's ready to go.
He does.
He's fully. He mainlined 2 hours of straight Villigan to prepare for that podcast. So
And we've done the Halt and Catch Fire together. So yep. You know, we got pretty good chemistry. So stick around for the premiere there.
And I'll be back next week. Are we going to be doing instant takes this year? So yeah, we are. We just did a huddle, and we are doing an instant take. Not the first one, because I'll be making my way back.
Yeah.
Or no, I'll be in the middle of a celebratory wedding cruise.
In the middle of the ocean.
Be in the middle of the Gulf of Mexico. Hopefully not at the bottom, but I'll be back the next week, and I'll probably do a little bit of kind of talk over our opinions in the first episode to kind of make up for lost time, and then jump right into second one. So sorry about that, scheduling snafu, but Eric,
it'll still be fun. Yeah.
You're in good hands with Eric. He's a good dude.
Yep,
smart guy.
So yeah, until next week. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See ya. Hey, I know the whole point of this podcast is we're excited Better Call Saul's coming out, but did you know there's a whole lot of balls in the air here at Bald Move? We're starting very soon our Leftovers coverage. Very excited. The 2015 Baldy Award winner.
Yeah.
Reigning champ. They took a year off. Can they come back even stronger? And Fargo, Noah Hawley's coming back, fresh off his success of Legion, with another season of... Fargo, and also starring the fabulous Carrie Coon from Leftovers. We're going to be double barrel Coon.
Yeah.
Double barrel Coon hunt here.
Double barrel McGregor hunt.
A literal double barrel McGregor hunt. He plays twins himself. So that's exciting. We also have a lot of other cool content that's come out. We had a quip that dropped today. This is Wednesday. We also just got done with the review of the latest Ghost in the Shell, starring Scarlett Johansson.
Uh-huh.
And finally, next week, we get the debut of a kind of cool feature, The Empire Business, which is a show that Jim and I are doing about the business behind the business of podcasting. That's going to be for club members. So check those out, and hopefully you will find something you like between this and Leftovers and Fargo.